Good morning and welcome back. Happy Tuesday to you. Hope it's going well. We just had a relaxing conversation with Hillary Lindsay of Willow Tree Journeys, and she's got this great yoga studio here in Waterbury, right on Stowe Street. Stowe Street's a happening. That's where we are at WDEV. My morning started, not yoga, but I didn't have any hay right in the main part of the barn, so I had to climb 14 feet up a ladder and grab some bales and throw them down. And I'm always a little nervous to throwing the bales down because you never know where they're going to bounce. And I've had a hay bale knock my ladder over, and then I have to use my cell phone and call a neighbor to come and set the ladder back up so I can get out of the barn. So I always bring my cell phone to the barn when I'm dealing with the sheep, no matter what. So it's my little safety part of my journey. Our next segment, I'm so excited about. We've got Stephen Russell Payne, who is a great Vermont author. Number of books out, protege in some ways of one of my favorite writers, Howard Frank Mosier, and we'll talk a little bit about that too. And Stephen has done books, including one with Rick Norcross, who is a friend of the station here and longtime Vermont musician and just amazing guy. And joining us also is Carrie Cook, who is a book designer, and she reads manuscripts and designs the covers and interiors. She's a musician as well in her own right and an artist, and we'll find more out about Carrie. But I want to welcome you both to Vermont Viewpoint.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Thank you, Brad. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great having you both. Stephen, you've been a guest in the past and have had this writing journey that just keeps going. You know, when you were in the very first book, A Story Up in Maine, I think, did you think this would all come to fruition?
Well, it's really been a dream come true.
Yeah.
And you know, I compliment Tom Slayton and John Lazenby at Vermont Life. That's really where I started. I wrote stories for them for probably 10 years, for a long time, while I was getting the novels and other things going, and learned a ton from them and from Howard Mosier.
Yeah.
And more writing became kind of a central part of my life. There was that surgery career that was going also, and but I've been very fortunate to be able to keep the writing going, and I'm on my seventh book now that I'm on a second draft of, and Carrie and I were just talking about, we just had some wonderful surprises when I was writing a story for Vermont Life on Rick Norcross. And his life was just so fascinating and complex that I ended up, you know, writing a whole book about him, which has found its way all over the country. And you just never know, you know,
yeah,
which story's going to connect. And as Rick's career has just blossomed unbelievably, you know, that book has traveled all over the place, you know, as have the other ones. But I've also been really fortunate to work with people like Carrie, who's just an amazing book designer, great person. We just had breakfast together to talk about the show, but we actually never got to talk about the show.
Of course. Oh, who cares about the show?
But here we are.
Here we are. So Cliff Walking, was that your first book?
That was my first novel.
First novel, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And so what's the cathartic part of writing for you? Was Cliff Walking, did it reflect a journey at all, or it was just a story you wanted to tell?
It really did. Through a love story, I deal with spousal and child abuse and a lot of heavy issues, addiction, et cetera.
Yeah.
And really, the kernel for Cliff Walking started back in the 70s when I was working summers as a deputy sheriff in Caledonia County, believe it or not, I was going to Tufts University, and I worked as a deputy in the summer, which may have been the best job I ever had. But I witnessed a lot of particularly spousal abuse. And back then, the state's attorneys and others, they just thought those were domestic behind closed doors issues. Rarely did they indict anybody, you know, for spousal abuse. And I remember feeling that was so wrong. It was like this visceral feeling like someday I'm going to do something with this. So the characters and the story really started back with that kernel of just feeling like something a lot more needed to be said about spousal and child abuse. And it ended up coming out, you know, as that book. And I partnered with Vermont chapter of Prevent Child Abuse America and multiple other organizations as I toured with that book. And actually it won an international award. It was pretty cool. So that that really launched my bigger writing career.
Yeah, and you have a To Kill a Mockingbird courtroom scene as well, right? And
yes. Pretty intense one.
Yeah, yeah. So it's Cliff Walking. It's one of Stephen Russell Payne's first book. It's a great read. I haven't read it in a while because it came out a while back. But it started you on this sort of journey of – and you had one sequel to it.
Yeah, Life on a Cliff. Many people were asking me at book events, you know, what happens next.
Yeah.
I hadn't really thought of writing a sequel yet, but – I was kind of shamed into writing a sequel, and that did really well. So I'm glad I wrote the sequel also.
Yeah, it's totally great. Carrie Cook, you're in Hyde Park, which I think is one of these lovely little secret towns. You've got this sort of mansion there, the courthouse. It looks like the To Kill a Mockingbird kind of ambiance. What's it like being in small town Vermont?
Oh, wow. I love it there. I moved there a little over 7 years ago from Cambridge, Vermont.
Yep.
And ended up buying a house that used to belong to Steve Hall, who I don't know if you know who she was, but I think she lived to 105. Used to have parties, raging parties, after directing productions at the opera house down the road. So I feel her presence in the house sometimes. It's really cool. I like living there a lot, and it's got a great barn for music, and it's just a wonderful spot for creativity.
And like Stephen was just saying, a lot of hats. He was a sheriff at one time, a whole bunch of things. You're doing these manuscripts, and you're an artist and designer and covers, and you have to read manuscripts to get the vibe.
Yes.
But also a musician and artist. What is that?
I always like to say that I'm a designer with a jazz bass problem. It's so true.
Is that clinically recognized? Or?
Yeah, what do you say, Stephen?
How would we code that?
Yeah. Well, you guys have sloppy handwriting, so it doesn't really matter, does it? Yeah.
Well, I play all styles of bass, but I started playing upright bass at the age of 10. But this story is really about book design. And my dad was an incredible artist and jazz musician, so I got a lot of inspiration from him. So I started doing artwork and design for him. Maybe I was eight or nine, doing watercolor renderings of his houses that he would design, interiors that he, and then he would frame them and give them to the client, and they loved it. So I started doing that, and eventually, I don't know, I had a knack for design. Ended up going to an art school in New York City called Parsons School of Design. And I've been designing books now for almost 55 years, so that's going to date me, everybody.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, I do love it. It's it's creative, just like music. They're very similar, in fact.
Yeah, no, I love the blend. We're talking with Stephen Russell Payne, who is a Vermont author, and Carrie Cook, who's a book designer and musician and artist. So I promise both of you, we're going to get into how you build a book. But I have to ask, Carrie, I love, been going to the Highland Center for the Arts and listening to music up there. It's a great journey for me. And also in Stowe, a winter Christmas concert. And I keep getting attracted to the bass as an instrument. It seems to have so much to do with carrying everybody else in so many ways. It's like the heart of the body in some ways. Is that?
Yes, absolutely. It's the glue.
Yeah.
And the rhythm. And it keeps it all together. And it's really, and I love the low end. So
yeah.
It does all of that.
Totally. And it's also, it's sort of underappreciated, I bet.
Yeah, maybe, but that's okay. I mean, I'm just enjoying it so much, I don't really care.
Yeah.
You know?
So the art stuff, I love to talk to my guests about sort of when, and part of this is just recognizing that everyone has a gift. Everybody has a soul gift of some sort. And it doesn't always get sort of watered and sunlight and stuff. But when did you sort of feel this art soul stuff for you?
Since I was born.
Okay. Early on.
Early on. Yes. And I was also quite influenced by the books that I had growing up. Some beautiful ones. Illustrated Maxfield Parrish. If you don't know who he is, he actually lived sort of in Vermont and sort of New Hampshire and did these incredible fantasy-like paintings that glowed. I was just, you know, raptured with him, enraptured. And other children's books, I loved them as a kid. And so I always kind of had in the back of my mind that I would like to have something to do with that someday, you know, design them or do the illustration. Now I do both. Yeah.
And so art, is it like writing? And Stephen can help us with this in a minute. But did you need a discipline of sort of painting each day? And just how did that work for you?
I guess there's some discipline, but it's mostly a passion.
Yeah.
It's mostly a passion, and that's what keeps you going because you're so into it. And it's always – it's as an artist, it's really, I guess, easy to start something. Sometimes it's not so easy to finish, but I like getting something completed. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Some people have trouble with that, but I actually love completing things. So, but it's a passion. That's what keeps me going. And every book – or every art project, every logo, everything in the art world to me is, it's just a wonderful thing. It's a world, and each thing is different. Every book is different.
Yeah. When you are being asked to create a cover for a book, do you typically need to read the whole book, or do you get the flavor from a little bit of reading?
I like to read the whole book if I have the time.
Yeah.
And most of the time I do. I also almost always want to have a consultation with the author. The author is going to give me insights that I may not have gotten from the book. Hmm. And also the author might have an idea about what that cover should be like, but or what the inside even looks like, depending on if it's an illustrated book. But I am a true believer in that the book cover can be judged for what's inside the book.
Uh-huh. I was going to ask you about
yes,
that.
Yes, I do believe so. I come from the message. It's like, to me, the most important thing about a work of art is what does it communicate and what audience is it communicating to? And if I get those things right, it's like bingo, I hit it right, you know.
Well, Stephen and I are in one part of the studio and you're in another. We're looking at his book that you illustrated, You Were Always There.
Yes.
And an absolute beautiful cover in every all respects. And I know that the bookstore people tell me that there's a typical pattern that the consumer will take a look at a cover. So you've attracted them. They'll look at the back page. They'll look at the inside. They might read one paragraph of the front. Is that how you do it, Stephen?
Well, I've joked that the cover of You Were Always There is so beautiful that most people at book events, they comment about the cover and they never mention the story.
Well, one artist is happy.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to make a comment about Carrie's blended passions of music and book design. A dear friend of mine, Jonathan Edwards, the folk singer, I've been co-writing or editing his memoir, and we set up for them, he and his wife, to come visit and to meet Carrie for, as she said, a consultation regarding designing his book. So we're at her house in Hyde Park, and I am attempting to kind of do some business around how you set down to design the book and that sort of thing. And both of them are like reaching for their instruments, him a guitar, her a bass. And they both kept saying, well, you know, we want to play a little. And I said, well, after we do the business part, you can play. Well, that all fell apart in probably 5 minutes. And the two of them end up in her music room in her barn, which is absolutely beautiful, and went on this 45-minute jam jag with a friend that came by with her boyfriend who were dancing. And I mean, both of her passions were completely on display. And I think we finally had to take their instruments away from them to talk about the book.
There's always a story behind the story. Yeah. So I'm talking this morning with Stephen Russell Payne, who's a favored Vermont author, a lot of books out, and Carrie Cook, who is a book designer. She reads the manuscript and then develops with the author covers and interiors. So really gets the ambiance of the book and creates something. You Were Always There is one of Stephen Russell Payne's books, and it has this beautiful cover and really very meditative, like my earlier guest sort of feels the quiet and the calm. So great cover there. I wanted to mention to you, Carrie, I asked my daughter, who's 14, in her room now are two bookcases with about 200 books in them. And it's a piece of art. She's into the Percy Jackson series and Thorn and Roses series. And book covers are just amazingly artistic now. I don't know. Did you think they always were?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, always.
Yep.
Maybe not quite so modern, you know.
Yeah.
But they're completely wonderful and artistic, and I can get lost in them.
Yeah. So maybe we can just sell book covers.
Covers.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Stephen.
Forget the story.
That's not what we want to.
Well, hopefully they attract enough that makes you want, you know, makes a person want to buy the book. And then you read the story and you go, oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's everything I thought it would be, you know.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that now that you mention that, of course, I grew up on Hardy Boy books and read, you know, all of them at a young age, but each cover, you know, had a little depiction of the mystery, and that was intriguing to me.
Yeah. Yes. Mystery is a good thing. It's kind of, you get stuck to it.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have to like get more into it until you're unstuck.
Yeah, but you're the lure to the book, though.
I am.
And what a great privilege. And it must be a privilege working with authors and getting to know them and the inside story.
It is such a privilege. I do enjoy that part a lot. I like people. I like their stories, where they came from, how they came to write the book they wrote. In particular, Stephen and I got along great because we would just have a good time every time we got together. Right, Stephen?
Absolutely.
Even though he took away your bass, but
I had to discipline her at times.
Oh, yeah. We would just sit there and howl. We would laugh. I'd go over concepts. He'd be like right there with me. You know, he'd have great ideas and we would talk things over. And then I'd throw out another concept and he'd go, yeah, yeah. And then he would come back with a concept. And then we eventually came up with the concept. And then it's up to me to actually put the artwork together. And I can do the artwork any which way. You know, I've been using Photoshop since it was invented. Mm. I can do all kinds of fine arts, watercolors, oil paints, graphic arts, AI. I can do it all.
Yeah.
But whatever the best thing or best method is what I use for the message of the book.
And I suspect you don't always know in the beginning, right?
I don't.
Yeah.
No.
So it's sort of a journey, and then you dig a little bit and the magic happens.
You got that right.
Yeah. What a great symmetry between two people in the written word and then the artistic part of it. It's just a beautiful thing. Stephen, part of the premise of the show you told me today was when you go out and you do book signings. And what did you hear there?
I believe I've never done a book event, and I've been fortunate to do them all over the place, where at least a couple of people come up to me and ask me generic questions like, well, how do you write a book?
Yeah.
I was saying to Carrie earlier, I'll never forget a woman in Bar Harbor, Maine. I was up at Sherman's Books doing a signing, and she came up and she said, I've always wanted to write a novel, and I've blocked off 2 weekends to do it.
Ah, yes.
And I did stifle a laugh, and, you know, we chatted a little bit, but I think there are so many people who want to write, whether it's family memoirs or a novel or a short story collection or whatever, and it feels like, when you've never done it before, this mountain that's not scalable.
Yeah.
You know, it's just too high to climb. And I think it would be helpful to people to kind of get an inside look behind the curtain of what really goes into writing and publishing a book, mostly for people who aren't with one of the two or three huge publishers that own all those traditional publishing houses now. You know, most people I know are doing independent publishing in one form or another, so you really have to build your own team, if you will.
Yeah.
The good news is, as you and I were talking about, Vermont and New England is just peppered with people who can help you on any part of that journey. Though I think Stephen King said this, I'm going to quote him, I hope, that writing a book is 2% inspiration and 98% perspiration. Mm. And it's really true. Mm-hmm. It takes an enormous amount of discipline and commitment to actually write an entire book. I mean, most of my novels are 300-400 pages, and it's a lot of commitment, you know, to get that all down and make it make sense and to move people and that sort of thing. But if you've got the bug and you've got that passion, the good news is you don't have to invent the whole journey.
Yeah.
There are people like the ones that I work with that are just wonderful, like Carrie, you know, to help you along the way.
So I want to get into what you do when it's 11 o'clock at night and you just finished your last word. You're like, I'm done. This is as far as I can take it. But before I ask you that, do you start on page one and write forward, or are you all over the place?
I pretty much, when I visualize a story, whether it's a short story or a whole novel,
yeah,
I'm blessed with kind of getting a vision of the entire story.
Nice.
I know where it starts. I know where it ends. There are a million details in the middle.
Yeah.
but I usually visualize the entire arc of the story, if you will. And then I start in the opening scene. It's really the way I work. A lot of writers spend weeks, if not months, working on outlines to their stories.
Yeah.
I don't as much. My outline kind of forms as I'm working on the story, but
yeah,
everybody has their own process. But I dig in. I want to get to know the characters.
Yeah.
And once the characters start to have a life of their own, as many authors say, I swear, there's days where I'm just writing down what they're doing.
Yeah, that's so amazing.
They just take off.
Right, right.
And sometimes in very surprising ways. In fact, the novel that I just finished a first draft of,
right,
the characters end up in a situation I never dreamed of when I started the book. But I'm really happy with it. Like, I really like what they decided to do.
It's a good thing you came along.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. So what's the handoff? What's the baton toss then?
So I'm going through the second draft of my new story.
Yeah.
And when that is done and in reasonable shape, it'll go to my freelance content editor, Leslie Kellis Payne, who's in Fresno, California. She's a legendary literary editor. She's just amazing. Hmm. She'll read it, comment on it. It'll come back bleeding, as we say. And I will go through another entire rewrite of the book. And once it's in really pretty good shape, it'll go to my first reader, who's my wife, she's a tremendous first reader. We put our marriage kind of in a box on the shelf, and she's really good at giving me very honest feedback. And then I have three other people that are first readers, and I take all of their suggestions. If two of them think something's off, then I know it's off.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes if one person doesn't like something, it may just be their own taste for it, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I rewrite the book two more times, and then once that has the book in pretty darn good shape, I'll go to Carrie with the book, who will read it and start thinking about the design of the book, starting to get a sense of the book.
Mm.
So Carrie, who I've just loved working with, is really the next stop. And depending on the looks she gives me, I can tell what's working and what isn't.
Interesting. Wow.
So she's been really instrumental in helping with that. And once she starts on that process of design, eventually the book goes to the copy editor. And this last book, Kathy Quimby Johnson, who's a longtime member of the League of Vermont Writers, who's in Cambridge, she goes through it and is super, both in terms of content, copy editing, inconsistencies, that sort of thing. And then I rewrite it again. And then finally, after Carrie and Kathy and I all think the book is as good and clean as we can get it, it goes to the final proofreader, who's Lara Bissette in Fairfax, is who I used this last time. And that's always a shocking experience. I thought there might be five or six errors by the time we got it to her. And Carrie may be able to remind me. I think there were 312 corrections.
Yes.
Amazing.
So it
even
takes,
with all the technology, right?
It takes all of this team to bring a professional, polished book, you know, to life.
Yeah. And so you have to take pride and put it in a box on the shelf too.
Oh, absolutely. Well, by the time you're ready to show it to other people, I'm hungry for critique.
Yeah.
And feedback. I'm very appreciative of it. And, you know, once in a while, somebody will make a comment about a favorite anecdote that I have in the book that they think really needs to be taken out, and I'll be internally offended for a few minutes. But, you know, the hell of it all is they're always right.
Hate that.
But I love that scene. But, Steve, it has nothing to do with the story, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you really have to just take a lot of humility to the process.
Yeah. But I'm guessing that a lot of it is they want to know more about something, and they're nudging you to bring somebody.
That's a very good point. I was very fortunate that Phyllis Mosier, Howard Mosier's wife and widow, read You Were Always There. Mm. And we sat in the carriage house in Orleans for a long time having lunch. And she had lots of good suggestions, but one of the key suggestions she made in You Were Always There was when Luke, the main character, comes back from Vietnam and has become estranged from Sarah, the love of his life, I had not fleshed out her viewpoint of what was going on, you know, the feelings of this very intense situation.
Yeah.
And I don't know, part of it's being a guy. I'm not sure what it was, but
right.
It hit me like a fry pan in the face.
Yeah.
And, you know, she really helped me kind of rewrite that whole section of the book, which, interestingly, many readers have complimented since. So
nice.
I feel indebted to Phyllis for her caring and critique of it. So those sorts of things just help bring out the magic in a book.
Yeah, making good better, for sure.
Yeah.
Making good great. Carrie, Stephen was talking about the process of getting from A to Z. When you are doing the artwork, are you getting feedback primarily and exclusively from the author, or how do you develop so that you get the right artwork done?
Right. So important to collaborate with the author. It's so, so important, and it's also fun. The first thing I request is the manuscript. Because I read the manuscript, first of all, for the concept of the book and getting a feeling for what the cover might be. Then I collaborate with the author, and that is a great thing. I ask lots of questions. We talk about the book, and we really get into it. And then we discuss what the cover might be. It's a blue spark meeting. You know, like we come up with ideas. And,
yeah.
Eventually we come around to something, or maybe a couple of ideas, and I might try them out. I might do some mock-ups, so to say, and then we go over those, and then we can see. But sometimes we get it the first time. You know, we get the hoop shot. We get it right first.
The three-pointer is
the three-pointer.
Women's basketball has showed us a whole new world, which is great. So with that. You're a professional. You can do mechanically, you can achieve pretty much anything. Are there manuscripts you look at and you go, you know, this is probably, I'm probably not the artist for this. Maybe somebody else is.
I'm trying to think that if that's ever happened to
yeah.
me, I can pretty much deal with anything.
Yeah.
And there are all sorts of diversities in books, you know, there's lots of different subjects. So I actually don't think I've run across that.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think we're hearing you have the ability to, musically and soulfully get along with everybody and
I try
and help them on their journey. So Stephen, on the book goes from, people reading it, giving you suggestions, rereading it, you do the edits, you get the first person right, you get the grammar right, you get all of this stuff right, and there you have it. But how do you say, amen, I'm done?
That's a great question. A dear friend of mine, Dave Borker, who's long gone now, unfortunately, once said to me that art is never finished. Alas, it's only abandoned. And I really believe that. I know for me, I've been writing long enough now that you'll get to a point where you feel like you've put everything you have into the story. And the way I can tell that I'm on the right track is I will get emotional myself about the story. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it. Like, it's not like I don't know what the story is about. But if I'm moved by the story, other people will be also. But nice. If I'm not moved by the story, probably nobody else is going to be moved by it. So it's kind of an internal intuitive thing where I just feel like I don't have anything else to give the story. And then you give it over to other people.
Yeah.
You know, as King says, you open the study door and let other people in, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, I also wanted to mention a lot of people wonder how do they connect with all these different people and support people that I'm talking about. And you're well aware of the League of Vermont Writers. That's really a super organization that has pretty much everybody I'm talking about today that's in Vermont a part of it. And I really encourage people to look up the League of Vermont Writers for other writers and editors and proofreaders. And it's a great place to physically attend or virtually attend. It's just a great organization to stick your foot in. So many people perhaps want to write a memoir just for their own use or their own family.
Yeah.
But they just have no idea how to go about it. And the League is a great place. Another place is Writer's Digest. It's all online now. They have courses and seminars on everything under the sun to do with writing. So I hope people won't feel lost and alone out there thinking about writing a book when there's all kinds of help that's really easy to connect with.
Right. And a lot of different ways, like you said, to publish. There's self-publishing. There's, you know, Amazon. There's just – it's all over the place.
Right.
There's something for everybody, I guess.
I think the key is if you want to publish on a professional, commercial level, you've got to have all these elements in place that I'm talking about.
Right.
The reading public, if you will, is not very forgiving. You know, you've got to have a polished product if you're going to put it out there for the reading public in general. But if you're doing it for your grandkids, who probably don't know what a book is anyway, it doesn't have to, you know, meet the standards of commercial publishing.
Yeah, you remind me, and thanks for mentioning League of Writers. There was an event in the Northeast Kingdom and our friend Jerry Johnson's, and Paula Munier is a literary agent, and I remember her saying at her talk that, you know, she essentially can read 4 or 5 sentences and either go, this is pretty good, or off to the trash barrel. So you want to get it right, is what you're telling us.
You got to get it right. And, you know, on the topic of discipline, I actually gave a seminar, one of the seminars at that retreat on discipline. And I had this fellow, I think he told me he was 80, who had been working on a novel for a long time. And after I gave this talk about what it takes to be disciplined, he came up and he said, well, I'm too old to get disciplined. And I said, well, you're never too old, but, you know, that's really what it takes. I mean, I show up at my writing desk 6-7 days a week, you know, to do something.
Yeah.
Write, edit, promo, respond to readers, you know, whatever. And as Carrie said, it's a real blessing if you've got the passion, whether it's writing or yoga or music. But if you've got it, you know, use it.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking back to one of my favorite authors is John Steinbeck, and John Steinbeck took a pencil and paper and wrote novels, which must have been the most laborious thing. In modern age, at least we have some advantages of getting things down quicker.
Howard Mosher wrote all of his books longhand on yellow legal pads.
Did he? Yeah. quite amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm reminded, you were talking about how Howard Mosier took things to some extremes, where he had this beautiful French-Canadian character in a book who went into the freezing, icy water. Not only did he go into the water, but he would swim down and catch trout with his hands, you know. I've gone into some icy water, but going down and catch trout with my hands is not going to happen.
I don't think Howard did that either.
You don't? No. Well, in his brain. So, Carrie, we're running we're getting to the end of the segment, but are there books out there that you just fell in love with the cover in your childhood or in your journey that are just like soul warming?
Yeah, especially when I was a kid. A Child's Garden of Verses, all the Maxfield Parrish illustrated books. I they were just so magical. That's what got me into it. Yeah. I do want to just say one other thing. It's a little off of what you asked me here, but I was so interesting what Stephen said about when he knows his book is done, because it's so similar with a book cover. If it creates an emotional impact, I'm done. That's like the key.
I love that. Yeah. So tears come to Stephen's eyes when he reads something he wrote because it touches his heart, and you know the same thing.
Yes, I do.
Well, I want to thank both of you for joining me this morning, aspiring writers and even artists. There's two great careers here, and there's hope. It's methodical, League of Writers can help you. You can find Stephen Russell Payne's books. Google him and also Google Carrie Cook. This is Brad Ferland, Vermont Viewpoint. Be back next week. And thank you, listeners. We can't do radio without you.